Wellness, today, March 12th, 2007. I will open the public hearing on Senate Bill 155. Andy.
Thank you, Chair Tomei. Senate Bill 155 would authorize the Department of Human Services to administer programs to assist in the development of drug and alcohol-free housing. It would also change the name of the Eastern Oregon Psychiatric Center to the Blue Mountain Recovery Center. It also specifies what a suitable facility is for defendants who are under the age of 18 and are under court-ordered psychological observation and are committed.
Thank you, Andy. Bob Nickel.
Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Bob Nickel. I'm Assistant Director for the Department of Human Services, and I'm in charge of the Addictions and Mental Health Division. Thank you for the opportunity to testify on this bill. This is one of the bills that the department was interested in seeing pass, so I'm obviously testifying in favor of concepts that we felt needed to get attention and statutory change. So this is a fairly simple bill, I think. Changing the name of Eastern Oregon Psychiatric Center to Blue Mountain Recovery Center. Just a quick word of background. About 2 years ago, I received a petition from about 60 patients at Eastern Oregon Psychiatric Center. They wanted us to change the name of the facility to Blue Mountain Recovery Center. We'd been working for some time on the recovery concept there under the then Superintendent Maxine Stone. And so I felt that this was something that we ought to bring to the attention of the legislature. And rather than call it a psychiatric center, call it a recovery center. That's clearly what the mission is. So it doesn't represent any change in the catchment area or anything else other than to solidify and put into statute the fact that this is a recovery-oriented facility. And I think in recognition of the patients who really brought this forward, we felt that it was a really good time to make this change. So that's the first part of this. The second part relates to the change that was longstanding policy direction that we'd all been working on, I think, and that was to get all of the kids and adolescents out of the state hospital. And we did that first by moving the little kids under 12 into a community locked secure facility in 2001. And then in 2005, we moved the remaining adolescent unit into a community facility. But there was nothing in statute that recognized that change to a community facility rather than a state hospital. So that's what Section 5 is about. And the third section has to do with Section 6, which amends the statutes that give the department authority for serving persons with alcohol and drug addictions. We already have that authority, but this there was no authority to do what we'd already been doing for some years, which was developing alcohol and drug-free housing. So these in some ways are technical, in other ways have some substance to them. So that's my testimony in favor of Senate Bill 155, and I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Nickel. Any questions of Mr. Nickel? None? Thank you, Mr. Nickel. Does anyone else wish to speak on this bill? All right. I will close the work session on Senate Bill 155 and open up close the public hearing on 155 and open up a work session on Senate Bill 155.
Well, Madam Chair, I yes. move then that Senate Bill 155 be moved to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Olson moves that Senate Bill 155 be sent to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Susan, will you call the roll, please?
Representative Allen?
Aye.
Representative Gilliam?
Absent.
Representative Kotek?
Aye.
Representative Mauer?
Aye.
Representative Olson?
Aye.
Chair
Tomei? Aye. Having the Senate Bill 155, having the required majority, has been declared passed. And I think this can go on the consent calendar. Anybody have a problem with that? It's not really making a huge change. Okay, we'll go on the consent calendar. Thank you, committee. Okay, we will open up a work session on House Bill 2181. And I don't have a list of people Susan, could you send me up the list of people who are here to testify? Okay. Okay. Andy isn't here, and I think we're waiting for amendments. This requires protective supervision of the ward of a state reunited with parent after out-of-home placement. Limits commitment of ward of state to custody of Department of Human Services after reunification with parent to 90 days or other period specified by court. And we had hearings on this in February. And we have materials from Department of Human Services. We have some amendments.
We just have the dash ones, right?
Yes, and I think Andy was going out with the amendment 2154. Nope.
Yes, my understanding of these is that there was a work group that, after the last public hearing, went and worked these out in the dash ones.
In the dash ones?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So do we have a motion?
Didn't take part.
So are you saying that this is the dash one amendment?
Yes, dated 3/8.
Why don't we take a short
break? Yeah,
okay. Okay, we will take a 5-minute recess. One, and you just now have amendments in front of you, and we'll call up Mickey Cerise to come and talk with us about these amendments.
Thank you, Chair Tomei and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Mickey Cerise. I'm Deputy Assistant Director for the Department of Human Services in the Division of Children, Adults, and Families. And I'm here to answer any questions you may have about those
amendments. Mickey, since we have just, this is the first time we've seen these, walk us through the amendments, would you please?
Well, we, after the last public hearing, I think it was the first public hearing on this bill, we had a small work group that met.
Tell us who was on the work group.
The Juvenile Rights Project, the Oregon Judicial Department, and the Oregon Law Center. And from the work group, we made some amendments that basically state that the department will actually, it may be better if I have Kevin George come up and talk
sure.
to the amendments instead
sure.
of the details. I'm a little hesitant on some of the details on the
sure.
amendments. Thanks.
Good morning, Chair Tomei, members of the committee. My name is Kevin George. I am the foster care program manager at the Department of Human Services. Mr. Cerise is correct. We had a number of conversations, and much of this happens by email as well, sending drafts back and forth. What we realized at the conclusion of the last meeting was that we wanted to make sure the biggest concern folks were raising, both at this committee and from Juvenile Rights Project and others, was the automatic termination of the custody. And so as we went back and really looked at that and then kind of regrouped to say, really, what is our intention here? And our intention truly is to make sure that parents have the ability to get custody of their children back at the appropriate time and not to languish that custody on for months and months and months. And so what we did decide to do, instead of having an automatic termination, was put in standards or areas of time where court hearings must occur. So once the department then notifies the court that the child is going back home from foster care, a clock starts ticking, and the court must have a hearing within 6 months to consider, does that child need to continue in the legal custody of the department and find findings of fact, or is it time to close out that legal custody of a child and let the family move on without department custody? So that, in a quick little nutshell, is really the biggest changes that have occurred on here. There is the methodology then is that it is all generated by reports to the court, notifying the court there are changes occurring. The department can send a report to the court 4 months down the line to say,
things are working fine. Here's what we have provided. We ask that there's a court hearing. Once we send that letter, court report to the letter, to the court, they then have 30 days to hold a hearing to make a decision whether we need to continue or not. So it's much more in a proactive standpoint than a reactive or just allowing things to lapse, which was some of the concerns of this committee as well as others.
Okay, thank you. Any questions? Yes, Representative Kotek.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would just like to commend the department and the work group. I think this gets at the concerns that I had about letting, either a case just coming off without any oversight or, some more proactive approach like you've mentioned. So I think this is nice. So thank you.
Yes, Representative Gelfer.
Thank you. I would echo that. I also expressed concerns last time, and this really does address those concerns. So thank you for responding so promptly and getting the stakeholders together and coming up with a good solution.
Any other questions?
Yeah, Madam Chair, one. Was the Department of Justice consulted on this amendment?
Yes.
Thank you.
Any other
questions? Madam Chair, just let Representative Maurer know. I also consulted with some of my judges down there in Linn County, too, regarding that they're involved in this. And so that was positive feedback.
Thank you.
Good. Any other for questions? Thank you so much, gentlemen. Juvenile Rights Project is here. Do you have anything to say? Anything you want to add to this?
Chair Tomei, members of the committee, my name is Amy Miller, I'm staff attorney at the Juvenile Rights Project. I testified with concerns on this bill, and we were pleased to work with DHS and the work group, and at this point we have no position on this on these amendments. Thank you.
Is there any questions? Seeing none, thank you very much. And
welcome.
Thanks for all of you for working on this and making it a bill that we can all support. All right. I would entertain a motion. Yes.
I would move the -1 amendments be adopted to House Bill 2181.
Representative Gelser moves the -1 amendments to House Bill 2181. Any discussion? Any disagreement? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Passes. The -1 amendments, 2181, having the constitutional...
Majority.
Majority, thank you. Passes. Okay, I will entertain a motion to pass 2181.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
I would move House Bill 2181 as amended be moved to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Gelser moves House Bill 21 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Susan, would you take the roll, please?
Aye.
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 Aye. Having passed again the constitutional majority, House Bill 2181 as amended will go to the floor with the due pass recommendation. I think it would be appropriate to have somebody carry this. Anybody interested? Representative Gelson? Okay. We close the work session on House Bill 2181 and open up the work session on 2154. Andy.
Thank you, Chair. House Bill 2154 would limit the conditions under which the Department of Justice could deny reimbursement to medical providers for sexual assault forensic examinations. It would also revise the statute to say that payment for examinations could not be denied in cases where the victims have not reported the assault, are unsure about their desire to cooperate with the criminal investigation and prosecution, or for those when the victim's identity is not readily available. There is one amendment to the bill that would clarify that victims of sexual assault who are 17 years of age or younger must be given a prescription to receive emergency contraception.
Would anyone like to talk with us about the amendments to this bill? Yes, please.
Yes, I do.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I'm Ronelle Schenkel with the Attorney General's Office, and I serve as staff to the Attorney General's Sexual Assault Task Force on their legislative subcommittee. Heather Huttanen from the Sexual Assault Task Force was here to explain this bill to you at the original public hearing, and at that time told you about the amendments. There are actually two parts to the amendments, and I might mention the other one. It's a little difficult to read because the bold language is the piece that Mr. Smith just explained to you, which is actually not the substantive amendment. That is actually just a provision bringing our statute into line with the federal law under the United States Food and Drug Administration on the contraceptives. The more specific and the focus of the amendments are, and I don't have an actual copy in front of me, I apologize, I gave mine away, but it's the section that talks about adding new text related to what will happen when the hospital or medical facility gathers this complete forensic exam, and talks about, thank you, and talks about how we will deal with the chain of evidence, and also speaks to, I believe, and here I'll give you the line. In your dash one amendments, if you look at, one moment, page 2, line 9, you'll see that we're inserting some new language here talking about the ability to seek the reimbursement for these full medical exams, and you'll see that we've added language to qualify, or clarify, I should say, that we are asking that these records be maintained. The identity of the victim will be kept confidential until such time that they're ready to move forward with prosecution. It speaks to how the forensic evidence will be stored, and that the medical facilities are to cooperate with law enforcement in providing those kits to them so that DNA evidence can be held intact until such time when they're ready to proceed with prosecution. So that is really the substance of the amendments. The original bill allows us to have the victims choose either the partial or the full medical exam, and this just enhances the ability to keep that evidence until we're ready to proceed with prosecution.
Any questions? Representative Mauer.
No, Chair. Actually, I do. I'm actually tying back to the emergency contraception bill. In the emergency contraception bill, we put the onus, the provider is not included at all in that other legislation. And here we talk about reimbursing the provider. And I was just thinking about this, so I haven't had time to investigate. In this case, is the hospital the provider?
Chair Tomei and Representative Mauer, that's correct. As a reminder, and I apologize, I should have mentioned this, this particular bill, House Bill 2154, is not a new mandate to the medical facilities that they must do this. What this bill does is say if your facility chooses to do these complete forensic exams, then you're eligible to get the funding through the Department of Justice. Likewise, this is language about seeking reimbursement. It allows those hospitals that choose to do so to provide these contraceptives and still qualify to receive the funding through the Department of Justice fund.
Follow up. So the question is, and that was in the emergency contraception bill, one of the issues that was never really explained was who pays for it. Who pays for the assessment and the supplies? Because you have a physician that provides services. Hospitals don't provide services, people do. But you also have a supply issue. And so does this kind of address that payment?
Chair Tomei and Representative Mauer, to a degree, and I apologize, I'm not an expert on our Sexual Assault Victims Emergency Fund, but as I understand the way that that fund operates, there is a predetermined amount that the hospitals and medical facilities know that they're eligible for, and upon following the criteria laid out here, they get that reimbursement. So this would fall in that overall payment that they're entitled to, but I unfortunately can't give the specific amounts today.
Okay, I think that answers the question.
Good. Any other questions? All right, thank you very
thank
much.
Thank you.
Are we ready to vote on this, Colleen? Great. I'll entertain a motion to approve the Dash 1 amendment.
Madam Chair, I would move that the Dash 1s be moved into House Bill 2154.
Representative Olson moves the dash one amendments to House Bill 2154. Any discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
Okay. And Madam Chair, I would move that House Bill 2154 is amended. Move it to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Olson moves House Bill 2154 as amended to the House floor with the due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Susan, would you call the roll, please?
Representative
Yeltsin?
Aye.
Representative Gilliam? Aye. Representative Cotes?
Aye.
Representative
Maurer?
Aye.
Representative
Olson?
Aye.
Yes.
I'm just looking at the summary statement. The effect of the committee amendment clarifies that victims of sexual assault who are 17 years and younger are to be given a prescription to receive emergency contraception. I don't think that's the whole meat of this bill, and I would suggest that before this goes to the floor, we get a little better clarification as to what the purpose of this bill is.
And would you like to carry the bill?
One should never open their mouth at the wrong time. If I get that clarification, yes.
And I'm sure that that can be provided for you, Representative. Thank you. All right, did I already say that it passed? I did, didn't I?
Actually, I didn't, but
it did pass with the required majority, and Representative Cowan has offered to carry it.
Thank you. Interesting how she
presented. Madam Chair, regarding that bill, I don't think Ms. Schenkel mentioned anything about the age 17, the amendment portion. But that was basically also a fix to getting alignment with federal government.
She did mention that.
Did she mention that?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Disregard.
And did you have something to do with the chain of evidence changes?
Negative.
No.
Okay. No.
Well, it makes some sense. It's nice to have it in there. I just was wondering. Okay.
All right. I will close the work session on House Bill 2154. Wow. Finished our work in 25 minutes.
Yep.
Anything else for the good of the order? Thank you very much. I'll see you Wednesday morning at 8:30.